some concerns about how this, what this would do to the randomness process that's presently in place. But the second argument, if you don't even get to that, is what are you going to add? If you have the people who registered to vote and you have people who have their identification cards and driver's license, et cetera, and when we merge the list, what we're doing is purging duplicates. If you had this third list and they're already falling in one of the other categories, they're going to be purged off. We can't allow it to increase their chances so that it could be in there like three times, when they have a driver's license, when they're registered to vote, and when they've requested. I mean, what we do when we merge lists is we take off duplicates to the best of our ability. So when we merge the two lists as we'd like, the driver's license and the elector, we'll be doing it using, you know, our technical equipment. We'll be having tapes and merging it. And then if you've got to enter a third one, you're adding the cost, and I'm not sure it causing technical difficulties, because these will be manualists, and I'm not sure that there's a gain to be gained. I'm going to make myself totally unclear. So anyway, like I said, we have two bases. One, in our testimony, we talk about what our problems are from a substantive law point of view, and I was just raising the technical point of view to you. To the amendments, we just received a copy as Senator Robert Staff was going out the door. The significant change that we would like to raise concerns line 13 and 14 of the Dash 1 amendments, which speaks to the division furnishing to the clerk at a reasonable fee established by the division. And as I understand, the reason for this, as opposed to what the present law states and as this bill would state, which is free of charge, is because motor vehicles only has dedicated highway funds, and so constitutionally they don't have any money to fund giving us. And while we do not object to whomever's either buying the list or supplying the list having money to do so, we do take exception to the interpretation that they cannot and have not been able to give it to us to date because they don't have monies to allow them to do that. And Brad Swank in our office has researched that issue, and if you have questions on that, he would like to give you some examples of what are the monies that they have available. Thank you.
All right. For the record and the committee, Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Brad Swank. I'm with the State Court Administrator's Office, and I guess I'm here to talk about money. One of the things that the amendments do, the proposed amendments, and is to change basically who's responsible for making the budget arguments before the legislature about getting money to pay for this. That was a decision that was made last session by this committee when they passed 2545, which required not just the Motor Vehicles Division, but basically any state agency that has a list to provide that list free of charge so it could be used for jury lists. It was something this committee considered important enough that any state agency would be subject to that. The Motor Vehicles Division, the State Court Administrator's Office tried to get those lists. The motor vehicles didn't comply because of their interpretation of Section 3A of Article 9 of the Oregon Constitution, which says that certain monies that are derived from certain taxes and excises are to be used exclusively for highway purposes and certain other purposes that are allowed. Their interpretation is not consistent with the interpretation of that particular section of the Oregon Constitution by as it has been used by the legislature in the past, because the legislature has traditionally allowed that money to go for administrative purposes of the Motor Vehicles Division, and this would be as much an administrative purpose as many other purposes for which they use those funds. In addition, the Motor Vehicles Division receives funds, substantial funds, that are not subject to that constitutional limitation because they aren't the taxes or excises described. Those funds include the monies that they receive for the selling of these very lists that they sell to other people for other purposes when they compile them. It's the monies they receive for reinstatement of suspended and revoked licenses. They're monies that they receive from the courts, the $5 that they receive every time they suspend a license or impose coercive procedures for us for failure to appear, and there are other monies that they receive that aren't subject to the constitutional limitation. In addition to that, in making the decision that this was their budgetary responsibility, that basically enables them to come before the E-Board and ask for and to have the responsibility for coming before the E-Board and or before the legislature and asking for that to be in their budget, neither of which they've done. So basically, the amendments as proposed and the trouble that we've had getting the lists from the Motor Vehicles Division so we can use driving lists in the past stem around money and who's responsible for getting the money and where the money is to come from, and the issues before this committee again, and it's, as I said, one that you decided last session that should be their responsibility. Anyway, I'm, like I said, I'm here to talk about money. If you've got any questions about what I said, I'll be happy to answer the questions.
Any questions?
All right, thank you. Thank you both. Cheryl Hunter?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cheryl Hunter. I'm political education coordinator for Oregon AFL-CIO. I would just like to add our support for this bill. We have long been a supporter and working behind increased registration, increased participation in the electoral system. And I don't need to tell you folks that the one excuse that you hear the most or the one reason you hear the most for not registering to vote is this claim about not wanting to be called for jury duty. So we are very pleased to see that it is not just registered voters that would be required to do that, and that this bill would expand that to a much larger segment of the population, and also the fact that it would increase the number of people responsible for serving on duties, which on juries, which of course is something that we feel all the citizens should be responsible for. I would half seriously suggest, you know, Senator Roberts mentioned the fact that people would have to choose not to drive in order to avoid jury duty, and perhaps the next step we might want to take, since driving is a privilege and voting is a right, we might want to require that people be registered to vote in order to obtain a driver's license. I mean, I will suggest that half seriously, but on the other hand, as participants in our system, you might consider that people should be required to participate in order to gain the privileges that are available from the system. And in fact, there are now laws, there is a law in Colorado that doesn't require people to register to vote, but creates a process where when you apply for a driver's license, you register to vote at the same time. There is currently a House bill that I don't believe will be, that there will be any action taken on, as far as I know right now, here in this session, that would create the same process. So there is precedent for tying those things together, but that is not relevant directly to this bill. So other than that, I would just say that we are very pleased to see this bill submitted.
Okay, any questions? All right, thank you, Cheryl. That's all the witnesses I have. All the witnesses I have signed up on Senate Bill 733. We'll close the public hearing. We'll go to Senate Bill 870. Senator Cairns.
Mr. Chairman and members, for the record, Grattan Cairns, State Senator, District 20, Eugene. I'm here to testify on a very simple little bill, as you can see. Simply provides for a private right of action and at the state level for enforcement of the Clean Water Act and gives at the state level the same rights that we have under Section 505A of the Federal Act. It would simply say that we are serious about addressing pollution and destruction of fish habitat and the waters of this state. It would provide a broader range of enforcement, but it does not enrich any person. The only enrichment that would come would be the restoration of the waters of this state and the fish habitat of this state, and of course the general fund in the event of any damages were actually assessed. I gave to your council a copy of this article to give you an idea. This is just one of many that you can find of the sorts of things which are occurring every day in this state. Unless you are an immediately affected party, and if you'll read that story, you will find that these people, even though they are downstream from and have used this water source for more than 50 years, found themselves without standing and have virtually no way to go. I think that's appalling, and it's something that occurs all across this state. What we need to do is simply say that as we have under the Clean Water Act, as far as taking action against the EPA administrator for failure to perform, we need the same right under state law to give us the same powers. As I say, very simple little bill with a very salutary effect on the habitat and the waters of this state. I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have. Any
questions? Senator Wires.
In subsection 3 of section 1, it says that you've added a citizen to the existing law, and then you say damages recovered under this section shall be paid to the state agency having jurisdiction over fish or wildlife or fish or wildlife protection for which damages were recovered. And it says that the court shall award reasonable attorney fees and costs to the person, but that the damages will be as in subsection 3. So if this guy who's standing here by the his fouled water source brings a suit and wins, the money's going to go to fish and wildlife.
That's correct.
Okay.
And he is held harmless for his own cost, but is not enriched. In other words, we're not trying to make this some kind of a lottery for people to go out and looking for potential actions to take. We want them to be left monetarily as they were before the action, no greater, no lesser. We're not interested, and I'm certainly not interested in creating some sort of bounty, which would create a new set of specialists within the bar, but rather to provide a weapon for the people of this state to see that their waters and their fish are not destroyed.
What I'm thinking of is before I went to law school and presumably not encumbered by all the evils that lawyers are, I became ill from a water source on the home that I was buying, and I had to drill a well thereafter. I was only able to recover part of the cost of the drilling of the well and the installation of the pump from the person who'd sold me the house and had misrepresented to me that the water was good and clean and fine, partly because I didn't file a lawsuit against him, incidentally, but that's another story. This gentleman, if he has to drill a well, your bill won't get him that well.
That's true.
It's just going to allow him to be a kind of a private prosecuting attorney to get some money for the government to to make up for what it's done to the habitat.
That's correct.
Okay. Exactly agree with that, but it's your bill, and you've obviously thought about that issue.
Well, I tried to take the most conservative approach I could possible, so that we were not in the position of trying to, as I say, create some new avenue for private enrichment or some method to create a whole new class.
People to make themselves whole.
Or, in fact, even if they may be, in this case, in this instance, give them the full recovery that really ought to be due them. That is to say, a substitute water supply to make up for the destruction of their ancient and fairly good water source, which was destroyed.
Let me see if I can't make a comment that might satisfy both of two of you here on this. This particular law that you're dealing with, Senator Cairns, is a law involving only fish or wildlife, which of course belongs to the state.
Right.
Senator Wires would not be precluded under your bill, in my view, from bringing his own claim against the polluter for his own damages.
That's correct.
Not?
He would not be. I mean, right now, he has a right now and always would have a right to bring a claim for damages to his person.
Yeah.
This law only concerns the state's property, the fish and the wildlife.
That's correct.
Any questions, further questions?
That was, I think, very helpful to me. Thank you.
Okay. Senator, thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Let's see. We have Scott Ashcombe.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Scott Ashcombe with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation and the Oregon Association of Nurserymen. We regretfully oppose the measure. We have a great deal of respect for Senator Cairns and what he is getting at with the bill. We think, however, that that ORS 468745, subsection 1 and 2, which is in the bill right here, gives significant authority and power to state agencies to rectify pollution. Pollution is a very serious problem, and this action on the part of the state as described in Section 1 and 2 we think is perfectly adequate to deal with the problem. If the state is not adequately enforcing these statutes, the solution, it seems to us, is to put some pressure on the state agency directors and have them do what they are required to do by law. If they're for some reason looking the other way, that's really a problem for the executive to solve by whipping the state agency directors in line and having them comply with the state law. Allowing a private right of action to any citizen to sue to give damages to the state agency that ought to be dealing with this problem anyway, we think is a bad public policy, and we oppose that. We think that this bill, if passed, would increase the amount of litigation which the courts have to deal with dealing with this issue. We believe that many of these new suits brought by private citizens on behalf of the state agencies, because the state agencies weren't doing what they were required to do by law, might be frivolous in nature for the simple reason that a private citizen doesn't always have the technical resources to draw upon as a state agency. He doesn't have the kind of resources dealing with technical decision-making that the state agency have to determine whether or not 468745 is being complied with or not. And I give an example on lines 6 and 7 of the bill, looking at existing law. The state agency can bring an action if the injury or destruction of fish or wildlife habitat results from pollution or from any violation of the conditions set forth in any permit or of the orders or rules of the commission. Now, I submit that a state agency would know whether or not its rules were being violated more easily than any individual citizen. A state agency would have access to the permit and would be more readily able to determine whether or not the conditions, terms, and limitations of a permit were being complied with than any individual citizen. And we think that the state agency really is the is where we'd like to see the enforcement come from.
Would you happen to know how many actions have been processed by the Department of Environmental Quality and the Department of Fish and Wildlife in the past
10 years, say?
Mr. Chairman, I can't give you a number, but I can give you a personal experience I had where a lady who was a member of the of one of our county farm bureaus had a I believe it was a pulp mill had a malfunction and deposited on her farm 18 inches of sludge and basically ruined her pasture. And the solution to the problem was to have the DEQ go on out and require the mill to clean up the sludge that had dumped on her pasture. They didn't do that. They looked the other way and fined the mill $600. The law right here that you have before you, if it were properly enforced, would have solved this lady's problem. It wasn't properly enforced. So while I can't give you the number of instances where the DEQ or the Fish and Wildlife Department, for example, has actually undertaken action, there is evidence that they have looked the other way.
My guess is that there haven't been any actions brought by either one of those state agencies, which I suppose may be one of the reasons why this bill is before us.
Mr. Chairman, I agree. The pollution is a very serious problem, and the laws already address that problem, we think, in a very efficient and just fashion. The state agency is probably not enforcing them. The solution, while the problem which Senate Bill 870 then does address, is a valid problem and it does need addressed. We believe that it ought to be addressed through the executive and through requiring the state agencies to actually do what they ought to be doing by the laws of the state of Oregon, not to allow a private right of action and increase litigation. Increase the number of frivolous suits which are filed, and maybe give a neighbor who has a grudge against another neighbor a pretext to kind of work out that frustration in the courts. We think really the state agency is where to leave that responsibility and that power.
I wonder if there wouldn't be a kind of a cost-saving effect here, because even though I doubt very much that there have been any such action brought in the past 10 years by any district attorney or the attorney general on behalf of the state, if the private citizen is willing to, you know, front the cost in this thing, take the risk of the cost of litigation, that certainly does save the state the cost of doing it. And wouldn't that be a consideration?
Mr. Chairman, I think that the state would still bear an increased cost if 870 were to pass in administrative costs, even though fees and costs are given on a reasonable basis to the plaintiff in these actions, there are still going to be administrative costs that are not involved in the fees and cost of operating the court system. There may be a delay in the time taken by the litigation, which prevents the court from getting to more important issues. I think that fees and costs involved in subsection 4 that are awarded to the plaintiff would not account for all of the costs to the state if this bill were to pass.
Any other questions? All right, thank you. Yes, Council.
One of the we have a written testimony in the file from John Charles of the Oregon Environmental Council who states that this fills a gap covered by section 505 of the Federal Clean Water Act. It covers a gap in state law that's covered in federal law by that section. I'm wondering if you can tell us whether there was an increase in frivolous lawsuits filed when the federal law went into effect.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I can't say. I will say that I've had some experience with watching the implementation of the Clean Water Act. What happened was when the Clean Water Act passed, it authorized certain state agencies to enforce pollution abatement statutes such as the 208 section, non-point source pollution matters, confined animal feedlot operations, and so forth. And then it authorized $400 million for the purpose. The Congress then never appropriated the $400 million required. So it created a real touchy situation for the state DEQs that had to implement this. Here you had a statute to be implemented, and the statute, the clear legislative intent of Congress was to finance the cost involved in implementing that, and then they never did. So you do find that the DEQ and certain of the other agencies involved haven't implemented it the way that it was intended to be implemented, because there haven't been the dollars to implement it. But to answer the question as to whether or not there was an increase in frivolous suits, I can't.
Are there any further questions or comments? If not, Mr. Ashcombe, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Houck, Senator Frye wants to call Senator Houck next on Senate Bill 1016. Could you ask him to come up? Is there anyone else here that wanted to testify on Senate Bill 1016? Would you suggest we go next to the first House? Did you want to testify after Senator Houck? Okay, well, we'll wait till he comes in. Okay. We've had one witness in favor of it already when we had a hearing before, so maybe we'd start out by a witness against, Roger Martin. And then I see the Director of Common Cause, Pam Ferrari, will be after that.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin, and I'm appearing before you today as chairman of the Capital Club Legislative Committee, a position that I was appointed to by our president, Paget Engen, who is also in attendance, however not on this bill. The other members of the Legislative Committee are Dave Barrows, Tom Donica, John Marshall, Denise McPhail, and Irv Fletcher. The Oregon Capital Club met on April 15th and discussed specifically Senate Bill 565, and those attending in room 50 at about 11:30 a.m. voted unanimously in opposition to 565, which probably will come as no surprise to most of you who have dealt with this issue before. The Capital Club are all registered lobbyists who are regulated for our activities in lobbying the Oregon Legislature. However, the expansion of the issue of lobbying to cover administrative agencies raises a myriad of problems that we feel go far beyond any necessity. I'm sure, and I specifically have not been involved, at least I didn't think I'd been involved very much in administrative lobbying until I examined the possibilities that were involved. I think most of us are concerned about possible contact with and actions with agencies such as the Public Utility Commission, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, and other agencies that set rates, rules, and establish some things such as the liquor agency that are of monetary value. But if you read the thing, and I've taken some time to study it, the extension of administrative lobbying would in fact cover all the state agencies that we're familiar with, the large ones, the Department of Transportation, which I personally have almost a daily contact with. I'll get to that now. Departments of Energy, Environmental Quality, Fish, Wildlife, Agriculture, Forestry, Human Resources, and I can go through the whole list. And we would, if this were implemented to the full extent, be including literally thousands of our citizens whose reaction would be, you mean I can't even contact my own government about something that oftentimes I don't want to become involved in? And I can think of the issues that are raised, for instance, the location of a garbage disposal site in the metropolitan area where hundreds of people are involved in something they wish would just go away, but spend well over 16 hours a quarter to become involved in something that they feel very strongly about. In my own instance, one of my lobby...
Spend over 16 hours in contact with somebody from a state agency, you think?
Yes, Senator. I believe that would be the case. Let me just finish here. In my own instance, one of my functions as a lobbyist is to represent and be the executive secretary of the Oregon Transit Association. That's a quasi-public organization, similar, I guess, to the League of Oregon Cities Association of Oregon Counties, and we represent the various transit agencies in the state. Now, most of those people would be exempt because they are public officials, but also included in our organization are a number of non-profit organizations that are in business to transport the elderly and handicapped. and we are in constant communication, and they are too, with Denny Moore, the administrator of the Transit Division of the Oregon Department of Transportation. Occasionally, or quite often, that has to do with rulemaking. One of his main jobs is the coordination and the flow of funds from the federal government, who are deeply into the funding of this kind of transportation. And I can truthfully say, from having examined this, there are several dozen of these people who would have inadvertently, or would have been involved and included under the lobbying requirements that those of us as registered lobbyists go through. I am registered. I just think that we will end up loading the Ethics Commission and Betty Reynolds' organization with a tremendous amount of paper, for the most part, that will have no effect on anyone. I would like to point out that the Capital Club strongly supports House Bill, I believe it is 2171, or at least the issue that has to do with the revisions of the ethics law. It is now in your committee. It has passed the House by a sizable margin. And we would hope that that issue could be dealt with separately from this issue, and they have tended in the past to get blurred, because we feel strongly that we want to help the Ethics Commission and its director, Betty Reynolds, to update and some very necessary administrative changes that